Venus, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Campus and Community Radio from Simon Fraser University, where we are located on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples. I hope everyone is having a great start to their day, great start to their week. We have interesting episode this morning. I am joined in the studio with Constantine.
Hello, hello. Good morning.
Yeah, and we're going to be talking about the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia and Transphobia, which takes place on May 17th, so in 3 days' time. Now, would you like to introduce yourself a bit about who you are, how I found you on campus?
Oh, yeah, it's... I think a very funny story, but also I really appreciate you coming out into the community and knowing where to find us and where to look for us. So my name is Constantine. I am the interim coordinator for SFSS out on campus, which is the 2S LGBTQIA, that's Two-Spirit, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, queer, intersex, asexual slash aromantic, plus all of the other identities within the variety of gender and sexuality, a resource center for all of that on Simon Fraser University Burnaby campus, but we also serve Surrey campus and Vancouver campus and basically anyone who can find us, anyone who has any like requests, ideas, concerns that go underneath the LGBTQ umbrella. That's all us. And so we are located on the second floor of the Student Union building, which is where Rebecca very helpfully found us. We're like in the corner and right next to the Women's Center. And our room number is Student Union Building 2230. And we're open 9 to 4, Monday to Friday, unless something else happens. And we're everywhere else. But I think you're highlighting a thing about like finding people and looking for community. So Rebecca, I imagine and I assume, and you can like correct me, that you like you either know because of the communications and the community out on campus has with CJSF to look for out on campus, or just literally Googling SFU LGBT ?
Yeah, no, I was aware of you because I'd spoken to Jesse, our public affairs coordinator, about, oh, I have this idea for a story and I don't know who to go to for an interview or who would be best to talk to about it. He was like, well, you have the Women's Center, you have out on campus, and there's a bunch of resources up there as well. And I know I'd emailed the Women's Center several times when I was doing Intravenous last year. So I was kind of aware of your existence, but I hadn't actually reached out because I don't think I'd had a topic that was fully, not like relevant, but where I was like, they would be the best people that I know of to speak to. So yeah, it was from Jesse because I reached out by email, but I'm reaching out from a personal email account that seems to love to find its way into junk mailboxes, as I'm discovering.
But also, I think this exactly is hinting at the topic and like the global theme of the Ida Hobbit for this year, like power of communities, is the fact that Jesse has been here for a while and knows everything, and that the fact that he's been able to connect two of us together, that there are other people and you already have connections to Women's Center, you already have connections to other folks around you. That's the power of communities. Wow.
Which is, if people don't know, that is the theme for this year for the International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia and Biphobia. It is the power of community. So if we're going to talk about that, what does that theme mean for you?
Yes, I think it is literally everything that I do in my day-to-day work is the power of communities, is facilitating that community on SFU Burnaby campus. It's facilitating that community on social media so that people know that this account is alive, and if you reach out, somebody might answer you. If you have a question, or if you want something, if you need something, if you're pondering something, this is a community. This is an established place. This is a community of people that you're welcome to, as long as you're not homophobic or transphobic or everything. But that's work in progress.
Mm.
As long as you're willing to accept that other people exist in a variety of different ways, I am always very happy to answer any questions or concerns you have, even if they're not phrased very nicely. And part of this, what enables me to do this, is the fact that I'm in community and the fact that I don't have to answer horrible questions all day long and then just go home and cry. But I'm in community. I'm able to also participate in my community, be connected to other people, be able to be inspired and nurtured by other people, and also offer that nurturance and that community, those resources to everyone else, and to make sure that this is an accepting and accessible space, community, whatever it looks like, because of if you're not in the physical space, it can still feel like a community. It can still feel like a space, like a little nook where you can be able to connect to other people and also to yourself in the way that you want to and know yourself as.
Yeah, definitely. Do you think as well that, because obviously you're based up at the Burnaby campus, and obviously SFU has a Vancouver campus and a Surrey campus, how do you find that it works in like building a community that can encompass all SFU students if there's some that are predominantly not up on the Burnaby campus? Because I know I've had that a lot in talking to some students when, for example, we were talking about tabling earlier, being like, oh, we have a radio and things like that, tabling at the other campuses. But they're like, oh, I would have to come up to the Burnaby campus. I don't have any classes up at the Burnaby campus. So how do you feel that out on campuses build a community that can encompass the three campuses?
It is tricky, and I acknowledge that as folks listening right now probably being like, out on campus is not there, or they need them. I acknowledge that. That is something that has always been in out on campus's mind, and the mind of staff, and the mind of volunteers and staff of collective members. We all know that we're not as much in Surrey and Vancouver. We try to be there for tabling. We try to have events there. We try to think about this. But also, it can be a one-on-one situation where you're like, I need something. I want something. Can we arrange a meeting? Can we arrange an event? Can we arrange something? And again, to be able to reach out to somebody and to know that they have all of those resources, it is all still cultivating that community. And even if it's not immediately local and immediately accessible, it still makes sense for folks to reach out and be like, you have resources. You have understanding of how this works. I know that I can reach out to you. I am reaching out to you. Can you make this happen? And then it's out on campus's job to be like, absolutely, let's make something happen. Let's continue working on this. And as we're working through one-on-ones, through one-offs, through things that are kind of small in scope, it is still important to maintain that until we're able to be there more for all SFU FIC students, for all undergrads, for all the grads, for folks that are here for a couple classes, for like professors and alums and staff who sometimes have questions, who sometimes need extra support and resources. All of this is important to know, and all of this is important to know as you're building that community and as you're working to be accessible to all.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we're talking about, obviously, you have you're well, out on campus and yourself have such a big role in this area, what exactly, like going into specifics, does your role kind of encompass in creating these safe and inclusive spaces for students that are around? Because obviously I would say in recent times it's become more prevalent that it's students around this age and younger that are needing these like safe and environment, safe environments and stuff, especially with a lot that's going on with like the SOGI resources and gender affirming care backlash, stuff that's happening in the States, there's stuff changing in the UK as well, that's specifically targeting, I would say, younger people in these areas. So what specifically in your role do you do that creates safe and inclusive spaces?
Yeah, it's fascinating as you're describing what you're experiencing and what you're seeing. And it reminds me of how Out on Campus came to be, which is a bunch of students came together and they started Gala, which is, I think, either gathering or like gay and lesbian association, which was a direct response to there is nowhere on campus for us to be.
Yeah.
There is nothing that we can see. There's nobody else that understands us. There's nobody else that is capable of answering the needs that we already have. That's kind of weird. We should do something about this. And then throughout, like, the times and the changes and requests for space, requests for staff, all of this is now here and out on campus, on Burnaby campus, in the Student Union building, which wasn't even a thing when Gala was starting up. And so I think it's important to remember that safer spaces and like GSAs and prides are all coming from a need for community, a need for connection, a need for resources, a need for knowing that other people like you exist, and how that is undesirable when there is an agenda or a perception that there is one correct way of existing and everything else that deviates from that is dangerous or harmful or capable of throwing everything off and making world into a chaos state that will never exit. And it is prejudice, but it's also political, it's also structural, it's also intersectional in ways of how anti-Black racism, anti-Indigenous racism, embarrassing.
That's all good.
How a lot of other marginalizations, like ableism, they're all impacting our understanding of who is good and deserving of spaces and deserving of being safe and deserving to of being in community. And then directly out on campus and other spaces like it, our response to, no, we know who we are. We know what we are worth. We know what we need. And we are going to create this if this is not going to be acknowledged by other people. And so that is kind of like the beginning, the little sprouts of this. And even spaces created by queer and trans people may not always be safe for all queer and trans people. It's still, they still need to be tended to, they still need to be nurtured, they still need to be able of acknowledging all the different horrible things that people do to each other on a day-to-day basis, when they do microaggressions, when they say things that they shouldn't say, when they decide that other person, quote-unquote, doesn't belong here, when there's different politics and ideas at play. It still needs to be nurtured and understood that, for example, out on campus is a place for everyone. And you have to be respectful of people. And if you're not respectful, if you're trying to stir some drama, if you're trying to offend somebody, if you're trying to exclude somebody, we're going to have a talk about this. Is not something that can be let go and we all just kind of look away.
Yeah.
And so part of this is that this is part of maintaining that safer space, as we know that people come from different walks of life, and it is still not acceptable to target people. It's still not acceptable to exclude people and to put people on the spot. It's still not acceptable to reproduce all of those ideas about who's right, who's correct, who's allowed to live, who's allowed to be happy within the spaces where we want people to be able to be their better selves, to be their best selves, to be the selves that they know they are, but they may not be able to express out in the world. And so it takes a space, it takes guidelines, it takes good intentions, it takes practice, and it takes knowledge and goodwill. It takes a lot of little things, but when I break them all down in tiny little pieces, it is not impossible. It's a lot of stuff, but if you want to have a good thing, it will come, and it will come with practice. And this is why I think it's important to have kind of institutional memory of like, yeah, people will come together when they need something. People will figure out how to be together in community, usually. Sometimes they don't, and sometimes they need a little bit more help, but all of the spaces that are being torn down now, and all the spaces that are being targeted now, are mindful and intentional, and they are all springing from real need and understanding of what community means to LGBTQ people.
I think as well, you're seeing that in like response to what's happening politically. I know with the what happened in the UK last month with the changing of definition of women in the legislation, instantly there was a massive response with marches outside Parliament in England. Even though it wasn't Parliament that did it, it was the Supreme Court. They knew like first avenue to get something changed, Parliament. Instantly marches. Now there's an appeal being made to the European Court of Human Rights and stuff. So there was an instant, like, there was already a unified community, but there was an instant, like, increase in it, not just from members of that community themselves, but also from allies of people being like, I've seen countless videos of cisgendered women saying, no, I don't feel threatened in a bathroom with a transgender person. Like, I happily have them there. If they want to use that bathroom, use that bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
Which has been the, like, I would say the biggest kind of example used in terms of that legislative change.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's still important to acknowledge that usually the people leading those kind of bigger initiatives are usually the most marginalized. A lot of trans women, a lot of trans women of color, a lot of trans women of color that also are sex workers, a lot of trans women of color that are immigrants, and a lot of intersections happening there. And usually people who are doing the most work are the people that are going to be most hurt if there's any backlash, if there's any opposition. People are on the front lines, and you and I and the community also need to understand that we also need to be there when people, when there's a call, when there is a need, not only in the days where it's clearly wrong, when something is clearly happening, but also when there are calls for something else is happening that might lead to such big changes that folks with more knowledge and with more understanding of how things work are starting to raise alarms. So it is heartening and important to see such a mobilization, such an outcry against obvious injustice. And usually the folks at the forefront of this are the people that have a lot to lose, but also kind of might not be able to exist if this injustice is instituted.
Yeah, absolutely. And if we go on to the International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, could you tell me, the listener, whoever, about it, what it is? Because I never heard of it until I came across, I think it was, I was looking at the SFU events, and it said May 17th is International Day Against Homophobia, Transphobia, and Biphobia. And so I was like, never heard of that. We had this conversation as well about how specifically in Vancouver, there is a lot of different celebration days of awareness, things to do with pride that I personally haven't experienced in the UK. I think the most prominent being anything happening in London, but I think that's very much like just one event and that's it. So yeah, can you tell us a bit about it?
Yes. And as we talked about it, I had to look into myself and be like, what is Ida Hobbit? I hear about this and I should know this as the interim coordinator of the Gay Center. But Ida Hobbit, International Day Against Homophobia, Biphobia, and Transphobia, was established in 2004 by a group of folks all around the world organizing to kind of have the celebration globally and also to have the ability to kind of like give it to other communities if there is not an ability to organize themselves. And May 17th is the important date because this is the day on which in 1990, the World Health Organization removed homosexuality as a disease diagnosis from the International Classification of Diseases. And I think, as I was talking this morning to my partner, 1990 is too recent. 1990 is still within the like memory of most people that have been around. This is recent. This is a proclamation of having attraction to people of other genders or the same gender is not a disease.
Mm-hmm.
And the World Health Organization decided that in 1990.
Yeah.
Which is a huge step, and it's very important that proclamations like this are made. But also, wow, that's a little late in the scope yeah. of things. And then, for example, as I continued looking, the diagnostic and statistic manual, which is what folks in North America are more commonly know mm. instead of ICD, which is the International Classification of Diseases, removed homosexuality as a disease in 1973, but it's still kind of within the DSM as like disturbance of sexual attraction, disturbance of desire, disturbance of personality and desire. And so the idea that you can be attracted to people of the same or similar gender is now only a problem if you're disturbed by it, which is still has a lot of ground for things to happen wrong in there.
Mm.
But again, it is important to acknowledge that this has been a change. And as I was looking it up, it's very interesting to me that this change was fostered by a community and an organizing of gay folks, that they hosted a panel at the American Psychology Association in 1971 that's titled Gay is Good.
Mm.
I think it's such a brilliant name to have an association for psychology to just come in and be like, hello, please stop considering homosexuality a disease. Gay is good.
Yeah.
It is not by itself disastrous or contagious or degenerative. It is an attraction. It is not a personality flaw. It is not like a delusion. It is not something that we associate with diseases and how disease is perceived. It is a way that humans live their life.
Yeah.
And again, all of this is within human memory. All of this is within like wingspan, if you're imagining your history in
yeah.
like human terms.
Like, because this is all happening, I'm thinking, like, within my parents' lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Very much within that lifetime.
And again, it's important because these are big proclamations that are impacting not just a specific country, but they're impacting a lot of practitioners and a lot of folks that are listening to, like, World Health Organization, that is important to note because, again, I am not from Canada. I was born and raised in Russia. It is not usually recognized that homosexuality is not a disease.
Mm.
It is still a pervasive talking point that being attracted to other people of the same or similar gender is a disease. But having that proclamation from the World Health Association technically is supposed to be a good talking point, a good rallying cry, a good activism help for people organizing against homophobia, transphobia, and biphobia. So it is, in my humble opinion, a little late, a little
yeah.
weird, but it is, once again, a very important step towards righting some wrongs that more powerful organizations and people who decide on what's right and wrong, what's a disease and what's quote-unquote healthy life, to be able to continue organizing for queer and trans equality, equity, and health and joy.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because I didn't know it was so, mm-hmm. as I would agree with you, so late. It's like when I primarily focused a lot on women's oppression and the stages mm-hmm. of like feminism and changing, and it's when I found out, I was like, wow, it's not really until like the 50s, mm-hmm. 60s that you're actually seeing a significant change since the suffragette mm-hmm. movement, which in itself, the suffragette movement, obviously very big movement, but it's like it had that movement and then there was just like a plateau.
Mm-hmm.
And then it wasn't until like the 60s that something else happened and you're thinking, really? Like it just there's such a huge gap. And then it, to me, I was like, it's still too recent. And then I think as well, and I don't know if you would have experienced this in terms of looking at the rights around this community, but I find that a lot of people outside of the community think, oh, like, we must be so close to, like, gender equality. And I'm like, not really. Like, you would think it from, like, there's, like, significant movements in history. But to me, when I actually, like, look into it and research it, I'm like, I don't think we're even actually that close. I don't know how you feel in terms of, like, the Two-Spirit LGBTQIA plus community, in terms of, like, there's obviously been a significant change, a significant improvement, but it's still, for me, I would say way off from equity and equality.
And I think you also touched upon this as we were talking about what you're paying attention to in the UK and everything that's happening in the US, where significant steps have been made to achieve equity, equality, justice for LGBTQ people. But then it is still scarily easy to take that back. It where people's rights are etched into one or two laws, and then you go, oh, it doesn't count. Oh, it's been repealed. Oh, it doesn't matter. Or, oh, if we just change the definitions of who is who, then we don't have to honor any of our previous promises and previous understandings of who our people are, who are the people within this country, who are the people within our communities. And we no longer have to respect them. We no longer have to treat them as citizens, as neighbors, as people. And so, again, coming from Russia, it is, it's been mind-blowing being in Canada and being able to go to a pride parade in Vancouver and look around and be able to say, oh, nobody here is getting arrested just by the fact that they're standing here.
Yeah.
But also at the same time, Canada has a lot of problems and Canada has a lot of injustices happening specifically to LGBTQIA plus people. They're just maybe different problems and problems arising from different places and different localities, different understanding of who people are and what identities are and how that weaves into civil life. And how all of that is still impeding people from having the life that people imagine when they think of, oh, what's a good life that I am entitled to and therefore everybody else is entitled to? Because, sad story, my family were like, I don't want you to be gay because I know gay people don't have a good life. But then it never occurred to them to be like, oh, because of everything else, because of society, because all of the, like, from day-to-day life to government life, queer and trans people are devalued and seen as not people. It is possible to have a good life. Everybody needs to be able to be who they are and to live life to their fullest. And currently, what we're seeing across the world and in Canada is that that ability can be taken away very quickly, and sometimes not enough is being done to even acknowledge different ways of how people are living their life and how people already existing to be able to support them and to be able to help them realize whatever they're doing to their fullest potential.
Yeah, definitely. And as we quickly wrap this up, because obviously I know you tabling is happening soon, I would like to know how you mark this day and what you would hope people take away from it, whether they're part of the community, whether they're allies, whether they have never touched upon this topic before.
Oh, it's, I think it's very scary for people to be like, oh, now I have to do something. I heard about something bad and now I'm responsible for it, which is a good thing. I think that's one of the things that I learned through a lot more Indigenous elders and Indigenous organizers talking about difficult and complicated topics, is that if you heard it, you are now responsible for this knowledge and for taking it further and acting upon it. And so if you're interested, you're, of course, very welcome to Out on Campus at any point. If you have any questions, we have books, we have resources. You have me, who is capable of having this level of conversation like I'm having right now with Rebecca, to be able to go through things and figure out where you stand here and what your next most achievable next step is. You're also welcome to an event we're